Welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Good to be with you for the next 60 minutes. We'll get to your phone calls a little bit later on at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter as well, as we are continuing to react to the news that Pat Shurmur is the 18th head coach in franchise history for the New York Giants. John Schmelk will join us later on to cover the Senior Bowl as well. But right now, off the top of the program, we're joined by a very special guest, former Giants quarterback. He covers the Vikings for The Score as well as The Athletic. You can also hear him on Locked On Vikings podcast, and that is none other than Sage Rosenfeld. Sage, Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you here on Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. I wish I lived on the East Coast so I could be covering the Giants every single day, but since I live back here in the Midwest, my roots, I guess I have to cover one of my other teams, the Minnesota Vikings, which did have a historic season. It was a lot of fun to cover. Definitely more fun to cover than the G-Men this year.
They did indeed. We'll give you an opportunity to reminisce a little bit about the Giants, Sage. We'll try to fulfill your wishes over the course of this interview. But to your point, let's start with the Vikings. As you just alluded to, you've seen this team up close and personal, and now the Giants have a connection to that team, given the fact that Pat Shurmur's coming over. Your impressions of Pat Shurmur from what you saw him do as an offensive coordinator in Minnesota and what you think he's going to provide for the Giants?
Well, you know, a couple of things. You know, Pat Shurmur, I feel like I have a long relationship with him. I was good friends with A.J. Feely going back to our early days when I was with the Washington Redskins, and he was with the Philadelphia Eagles that came out together in 2001. And I remember him speaking so highly of his quarterback coach, Pat Shurmur, at that time. So I sort of known that name for a long, long time. And, you know, now, what, 17 years later or so, he was obviously the coordinator with the Vikings. And so... he came to the Vikings as a quarterback coach under Norv Turner. They let Norv go mid-season last year and went to Pat Shurmur, and you could definitely see a noticeable difference in the offense. It was more precise. Sam Bradford set a record with almost a 72% completion percentage. They had literally no offensive line, so they had to do all these things to counteract that dink and dunk, wide receiver screens, quick throws. And Bradford's not a super mobile quarterback. So you come into this season, and everyone's really excited, with the Vikings being that, they upgrade the roster a little bit. And, Bradford's now been there for a full year, obviously with his late trade last season. And he has an unbelievable first game. They destroy the New Orleans Saints, but then Bradford gets hurt. So now they're going to do with the backup quarterback for all season. And what Pat Shurmur did with Case Keenum, who had been really just a backup quarterback and a guy who was undrafted out of college, bounced around to a couple different teams early in his career, ends up going to the St. Louis Rams last year and having a 4-5 record, and then signed as a backup to the Minnesota Vikings. And what he did with Case was spectacular. And he played like a really good NFL starting quarterback. I mean, not a Pro Bowl type guy, but his passer rating was in the mid to high 70s all year. Played well against some of the best teams in the league, and so I think that's probably one of the main reasons he got that job. Despite losing their starting quarterback, despite losing Dalvin Cook, their running back, they still had a very good offensive season and did it with a backup quarterback and a couple of backup running backs.
Sage, in looking at the background with Pat, he obviously had the West Coast influence, but also clearly Mike Zimmer's a guy who wants balance and wants to run the ball and doesn't do a lot of the schematic stuff, or at least as much as the pass-happy stuff, as most people think West Coast guys are. When I saw that number, 47% run this year, I mean, that kind of sticks out in today's game because a lot of teams don't want to do that. So how does Pat Shurmur's makeup mentality, offensive philosophy fit with what Eli Manning does well as a quarterback? We know, heck, you were here for a year and a half, so locker room right next to number 10.
Yeah, Eli had his best years, and go back in his career, and this is no secret if you're a Giants fan, but he had his best years when he had a really good offensive line. And I think that's the spot that they've had a lot of misses on, whether it be free agents or draft picks over the last couple years. And so I think you see that turnaround with the Vikings from 2016. They were last in the NFL in rushing. They could not throw the ball down the field because they couldn't pass protect. They did go out and get a couple of free agents. They drafted a center in the third round. And then, boom, this offensive line was much improved. Now, They got exposed in that championship game against the Eagles because they couldn't run the ball as well, and they just were not a great pass-protecting offensive line. But if you went back and watched every game this season when that offense was clicking, they were running the ball first. And that's, you know, that I always thought, you know, Eli is a great quarterback and in my opinion, a Hall of Fame quarterback. But he's not one of those guys that just should line up and throw the ball 50 times a game. He was at his best when he could hand the ball off, when he could do the play action, when he, you know, obviously has always been really good in the two-minute end of game, end of half types of situations. But he's a guy that needs that running game to be an effective quarterback. He is a great play action quarterback, and I think that's what the Giants need to get back to, the things that Eli was good at in 2007 through about 2012.
You look at the makeup of the Vikings roster, Sage, with Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, Kyle Rudolph. Certainly, Pat Shurmur had plenty of weapons, and then what he's going to inherit here with the Giants, Odell Beckham returning to full health, Sterling Shepard. Maybe there's some changes to the offensive line, the running backs, but how do you think the personnel around Eli Manning will be utilized by Pat Shurmur, given what you've seen him do in Minnesota?
Well, I think for Pat Shurmur, I think he's getting an upgrade, and I'm not trying to take a hit on the Vikings' skill positions, but Dalvin Cook was their explosive player, and Stephon Diggs is a good slot wide receiver. He makes some plays, but they don't have guys who can just really stretch the field. You didn't see a lot of balls thrown deep down the field this year. Adam Thielen's unbelievable, possession receiver, but he's not a playmaking type guy. The Giants have those types of guys. Kyle Rudolph maybe has the best hands of any tight end in the NFL, but he might run a 4.75 40. He's not really a vertical threat at the tight end position. The New York Giants have that at their tight end position. So, I think the he walks into a spot with better skill position players, but he also walks into a spot right now with an offensive line that really, really struggled the last couple of years, and in particular this last year, and that's probably first and foremost what the New York Giants need to fix.
Let me ask you a little bit of a generic question about the Vikings, though, because, Sage, you referred to it before, how they went and rebuilt their offensive line. This isn't so much a Pat Shurmur question, although he did play offensive line at Michigan State when he was in college. But as you mentioned, they drafted a center this year. He wound up starting right away. They signed two tackles with Remmers and Reef. So they had three replacement parts come in during the offseason, and it made a world of difference in terms of what they could do. A lot of people think the Giants have to do a similar rebuild this year. How difficult is that to do? How are they able to make that transition so quickly, make it gel, make it successful, and have Shurmur utilize their talents?
Well, obviously, you got to go out and spend some money, and that's what the Vikings did. They spent a lot of money at those tackle position, in particular the left tackle position. I mean, it was a really big contract. And then, to go out and draft a center in the third round, you don't always know how a third-round pick is going to be, and they threw him out there almost right away. He was the starting center by, mid-OTAs. They had a couple other veterans. Joe Berger is a guy who's been in the league for about 14 seasons, very possibly his last year. Guy that's always been sort of a swing offensive lineman, guard, center on each side, and backup starter. One of those Kevin Booth type players, actually very similar to Kevin Booth now that I think about it. Mm-hmm. So it is possible to change an offensive line quickly, but it usually doesn't happen. That's one of the, I always say it's the closer you are to the football when it's snapped, the longer it takes to become a really good NFL player. So. Wide receivers can come into their rookie year a lot of times and have success. Running backs the same way, even tight ends. But offensive line usually does take a couple years. And Gettleman's going to have to really be aggressive in free agency. He's going to have to pick the right guys that fit the right system that Pat Shurmur wants to run. And they're also probably going to have to draft a couple of guys, and which usually takes time to develop. And if they're all young guys, centers and guards and rookies, those types of guys don't usually develop as quickly. You need to have those veteran-type players that are good, solid football players in there. So it worked for the Vikings. It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard for that to have that same success with the Giants right away, but the Vikings showed it is possible.
Talking with Sage Rosenfels, former Giants quarterback, covers the Vikings for The Score as well as The Athletic. You can hear him on the Locked On Vikings podcast. And Sage, to that point, it was interesting. I was looking through your career, and when you were with the Vikings in 2009, Brad Childress was the head coach, who we coincidentally had on the program yesterday because he worked with Pat Shurmur, and he's also from that West Coast system of philosophy. From your experience in that system, how much similarities do you think there are between what Brad Childress ran as well as what Pat Shurmur is now running with the Vikings, and how the two of them in particular adapted to the personnel that they had on the roster?
You know, I don't want to compare, Brad and what Pat does, or Kyle Shanahan and Gary Kubiak for bringing West Coast coaches that I played for into the situation. You know, Brian Schottenheimer, my rookie year as our quarterback coach, we were in a West Coast offense. They're all different to me. Really, West Coast. Really, you're just talking about language. Maybe you're talking about sort of how you run meetings, sort of organizationally, how you sort of set things up. At the end of the day, there's a lot of ways people can talk English and the English language or whatever, but you're really talking language, in my opinion. So at the end of the day, you're really talking about what does that coordinator bring to the table from a design standpoint, from a detail standpoint, from a creation standpoint. You know, we saw in Atlanta this year when Kyle Shanahan left, they ran the exact same system, yet Matt Ryan and Julio Jones were nearly as effective under Steve Sarkisian as they were with Kyle Shanahan just a year earlier. So it's not just the West Coast system. It's the detail and the creativity of an offensive coordinator, an offensive mind, and how he uses his athletes, how he helps or hurts his offensive line. He's got to go and look, what do I have here? That's one thing Eli and I used to talk about. Let's not talk about what we don't have. What do we have? How can we capitalize on that? Every offense has weaknesses. I think what Pat Shurmur did this year, he knew the weaknesses of that offense. He also knew the strengths, and obviously he called and designed plays that took advantage of the Vikings' strengths and tried to minimize their weaknesses.
Final question from me, Sage. Let me ask you about Pat Shurmur's personality and his ability to make it work here in New York. You were here in New York. You played here with the Giants. You know what the spotlight is like. You know what the fans' passion is. You know what the media hot seat is, so to speak. This is a tough place to make it happen. How will his demeanor and his personality work in that locker room with those players, and how will it work in the New York City cauldron, if you will, that is New York? I mean, it's tough here.
Oh, it is. It is. But it's also, nothing ever works. Accomplishing is ever easy, and when you accomplish great things as a New York Giant, that's when the real greatness happens, right? So I think that his personality will work very well with how historically the good New York Giants teams have worked out. I don't want to call him stoic. He's not one of those fiery cliche types of coaches that sort of wins over the fans with just unbelievable interviews, but as far as the guy who I think the team respects, I talked to a lot of those players on the team. They love playing for Pat Shurmur. They lay it on the line for him. That's really what you're talking about, a guy that gets players to believe in each other, to trust each other, to trust the coaches, and being on the same page. And so he probably has some of that Tom Coughlin type fire in him. That Tom Coughlin type of accountability in the way he coaches and the way he gets his teams to believe, at least his offenses, the last couple of years. And he's also a coach that, listen, he's used to the East Coast. He was in the Eagles a couple of different times. He's been around the NFL for a long time. I don't think the New York media what a lot of people think is a tough spot to be a coach, and I don't think that's going to have an effect on him. He knows what he's getting himself into, and he chose the Giants. Because of their history, because of the first-class organization, because of those fans, and because of that spotlight over some of the other offers that he was given over the course of the last few weeks.
Sage, before we let you go, you mentioned this earlier, Eli Manning, in terms of him working with a variety of systems. You yourself, throughout your NFL career, have worked with a variety of systems. When you're a quarterback through that lens and you now know, hey, you're going to get a new head coach who's going to bring in his new offensive philosophies, what are the things you do in anticipation to preparing to know the ins and outs of that system? What are guys like Eli Manning and Davis Webb, what can they do before they get to OTAs and before the team gets back together now?
I just watch as much film as possible in the last couple of years. I mean, I think that's what you do, and you try to find all the little details of what the Vikings did. And, both of these teams, like, as I said, you know, 2 years ago or last year, 2016, the Vikings offensive line was really bad. And the Giants offensive line wasn't very good this past year. So I think that if Eli and Davis, where they can watch some of what the Giants did this year, you know, from week one all the way through the NFC Championship game, that will give them a head start. But at the end of the day, it's all about getting with those coaches once they all get hired and they all come in and meeting with them. And, you know, there's a starting offense that Pat Shurmur will, you know, give to Eli Manning, and then that menu will grow and grow and grow as the summer goes on, as training camp goes on. But I do believe that the New York Giants, I mean, they're just 2 years removed from an 11-win football team. I do believe that they can get this thing turned around, very, very quickly, and that Pat Shurmur is a very, very good football coach. I think it was a tremendous hire to me, and I follow all the NFL. I think he was the best candidate to be hired by any franchise this year. I think the Giants got the best, best new coach.
Well, as we promised, Sage, we told you we'd give you an opportunity to break down the New York Giants over the course of this interview. So we hope we met those conditions. But we do appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for coming on the program here with us.
Appreciate it, Chase.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on. Once a Giant, always a Giant.
There you go.
Thank you.
Sage Rosenfels, former Giants quarterback.
Good guy.
Covers the Vikings for The Score and The Athletic. You can also hear him on the Locked On Vikings podcast, kind enough to weigh in on Pat Shurmur.
And by the way, don't you notice how many former Giants quarterbacks wind up in the media? Jesse Palmer, Danny Cannell, David Carr, Sage Rosenfels.
There you go.
Jim Sorgi is the analyst for Colts Radio. I mean, it's just, that's what happens.
Yeah.
You know, you're a Giants quarterback, you know you're getting a job with a headset.
Well, and that position specifically is extremely knowledgeable, too. So I think that helps as well in terms of knowing the ins and outs of football. But that is a trend.
Oh, yes. And I forgot Phil Sims.
Well, you went for the tougher ones. So, plus, you were referring to backup quarterbacks. Phil Sims was a regular starter, so it's understandable.
Oh, he was definitely a starter.
Well, okay, I'm just stating the obvious in case, you know, we had to dial in.
I just didn't want to leave 11 out. I couldn't do that.
I don't blame you. I understand. It's definitely understandable given the circumstances
that
we are talking about some of the greatest quarterbacks in Giants history. With that being said, we are going to open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. John Schmelk is going to join us a little bit later on in the program. We'll get a report in terms of what's going on with the Senior Bowl. They had media availabilities yesterday. They had started practicing yesterday as well, so we'll get an idea of who's to watch in terms of the various positions. Let's open up the lines. We got Scott in Maryland. Scott, what's happening?
Hi, guys. This is my first time calling. This is not the first time we've conversed, because we've conversed on Twitter.
Okay.
My handle is DC Dog. I happen to be in the DC area, a graduate of Georgia, and a transplanted New Yorker. Now, I'm going to tell you why I'm making this call, because you guys are driving me up a small tree regarding this second pick in the draft. First of all, The comments that have been made makes you guys almost sound like fans rather than analysts.
Well, what comments were made that you're referring to?
Okay. The comments about Davis Webb, first of all. This is mostly from Paul. It's almost like he has a personal feelings for Davis Webb. With all due respect, Paul, I have no feelings for Davis Webb one way or the other. All I know is what I see and what – and I have the feeling that you are being in direct contact.
Well, let me just ask you, what have you seen of Davis Webb in the last 8 months since he was drafted? Or for that matter, since he last had a Cal uniform on?
That's part of the problem. I have seen nothing from Davis
Webb. Right, so therefore your opinion obviously doesn't carry as much weight because you haven't seen him.
That doesn't matter.
Oh, it does. It actually does.
What I've seen on the field, what I've seen on tape. Look, Paul, I could go into a school and look at a sixth grader and see a sixth grader has talent, and walk in and see a ninth grader and a ninth grader doesn't have talent. Okay,
that's what. Well, maybe then you should be teaching scholastic ball with youths, because obviously that's where your mindset is.
Let me finish my comment. The only way that you can compare the talent is the tools. You look at the tools that's given, and yeah. So the other thing also is that where have we been in the last 8 months? Well, Davis Webb is not going to be on the field in the next 8 months either, in the next year either, because Eli Manning is still under contract for a year, and he has a year option, which I hope the Giants take.
No, actually, he does not have a year option. He is signed through 18 and through 19. You got to do better with your facts, man. You really do.
And Scott, I'm missing Scott.
ESPN wrote it up as there being an 18 with a 19 option.
That's incorrect. Do you believe everything that you read? If nothing else has told you over the last few months, you can't believe everything that you read. Obviously, because the Giants would have five head coaches right now, wouldn't they?
Well, everybody would have five head coaches.
I mean, really? Well, okay. Exactly.
Scott,
so you got to do better.
Scott, hold on. We'll let you continue here in a second. What I want to do is I want to get to the point because, I mean, we're going in circles here. Paul could fight his own battles. I'm not here to defend him. But the bottom line is the whole point of you calling thus far is you don't think highly of Davis Webb. He thinks highly of Davis Webb. Where are we going with this? I mean, we understand the sample size is small.
Okay, that's why I said let me get to the point. You have to think of future considerations. You look into the future, and I know you can't predict with exact accuracy, but you look at what's coming up in the 2019 draft. There's not going to be another quarterback. Eli Manning is aging. You have to have a contingency plan. You look at the quarterbacks now in the NCAA, and the ones coming up. You're not going to get them in until 2019, and then you're still going to have to wait an extra year for them to really come up to speed. This is what was my problem with Jerry Reese. He kept saying there's no lineman out there, sure, but in the draft. Sure, there was no lineman out there, but that's their job. Their job is to look forward into the draft, into the NCAA, and look at what's going to come up. There's not going to be a quarterback that may be ready to come into the NFL for another 2 years.
Well, but Scott, that's your opinion. Scott, hold on here. You're telling us that there's not going to be any polished, ready NFL quarterback to be taken in the 2019 draft. We haven't even seen the 2018 collegiate football season. Have you ever heard of a time where a guy emerges after just one season, where he's on the bench, he gets the opportunity, he starts flourishing, and scouts see something? Has that never happened in the NFL? I mean, you're really jumping so ahead here.
Let me ask you a question. Have you ever run a business and had to look 2, 3, 4, 5 years ahead?
Of course, and there's no crime in that. But also, when you're looking ahead, you can realize that how you look ahead right now is going to be completely different a year from now because things change.
Absolutely.
So that's the whole point. That's going to evolve. You're basically coming to the assumption already that the way you see the 2019 quarterback class is not going to change at all between now and then, which I think is a big stretch on your part.
No, I think it's going to change, but I don't think you're going to have the caliber of the top three that are there now. The other thing is that you're also missing out on one point is whatever happened to competition. Why do we have to anoint somebody?
Why does Davis Webb have to be anointed? You just said
Eli's the quarterback.
Eli's the quarterback. Who's anointing him? I mean, do we have a parade? I mean, I don't understand where this information is coming from.
That's the way Paul makes it sound like.
I've been telling you folks since October, Eli Manning will start for the Giants in 18. I have never wavered off that fact. And I said, if by chance Davis Webb is ready in 19 and Eli is ready to give up the job, that's the earliest you can expect to see him. My friend, you got a lot of curveballs you're throwing here today. You need to straighten yourself out.
And Scott, appreciate the
phone
call.
Have a nice day.
But, you know, a lot of ifs, buts, and what's at this point in terms of how the class is going to pan out in 2019. I have said this multiple times. I think there's value, Paul, and we've gone back and forth where there's value that you could take another position with number two. There's value in trading down from the number two pick, and there's value in considering a quarterback at the number two pick. I think all options can be strengthened in terms of where you go in that direction.
I think most of what he said was just absolutely so far off the beaten trail and off the road, it's not even funny. But there is one thing that he said that I do think we do need to address. he's criticizing the thought of anointing Davis Webb, which, of course, we haven't actually done because a lot can still happen in 18 and 19.
Yeah.
But I do think he clearly has the potential, and it's realistic to believe he could be the next guy.
Well, you've said that on multiple occasions.
Multiple, and I'm not going to back down from
that. And you're entitled to your opinion.
Absolutely.
Whether you're right or wrong remains to be seen.
But here's the point. Well, what do you think you're doing if you're drafting the guy number two overall to play quarterback? Aren't you anointing him the next guy? Because you
think highly of him.
If you draft the guy number two overall at quarterback, well, guess what? He is going to get the chance to be the next franchise guy, and he's going to have to fail, like guys like Jamarcus Russell did, before you get rid of them. They will. You draft a quarterback number two overall, that guy is going to get a chance to be your starting quarterback. You have anointed him that guy.
You're not going to use a number two pick on somebody that you don't think strongly of or that you think has a realistic opportunity to be Eli Manning's
successor.
Yes.
So his comment about anointing a guy, well, you know what? It's just as foolish to do that and to draft a guy who's coming out of college in this class and anoint him the next guy. There's no more of a guarantee that any of these guys in this class are going to be the next franchise quarterback for any NFL team. Again, Tim Couch, Jamarcus Russell, Ryan Leaf. Enjoy watching those guys play, my friend.
Well, and I think it's also important to bring up with respect to his point about 2019 and beyond. I mean, if you look at the cluster of quarterbacks in this year's class right now, Paul, Mayfield, Darnold, Rosen, and I'll throw Allen in there. I mean, nobody was necessarily crowning all four of these guys at this time last year. So the point is that they improved their stocks based on how they performed this collegiate season.
You know what's funny about that? You are right that last year when we talked about the potential guys coming out, there was a hint and a hope that the 18 quarterback class would be better than the 17 class.
Yes.
That is true. It turned out to be that way. But having said that, you know, it's also been expressed by more than one person, and even on this show, with some certainty, that these guys are far from pro ready. They're going to need quite a bit of work before they have a chance to, which means in that time, as you have said, who knows what direction they're going to go in. I've said Josh Allen, to me, has the most pro-ready tools of any of these quarterbacks. And it's funny because I've taken some heat on this show and on Twitter about that. And now this week, what do we got? Kuiper's saying Josh Allen should be the number one pick. We got all the people at the Senior Bowl saying Josh Allen is blowing it up and he looks absolutely sensational. Well, no kidding. I told you that weeks ago. But having said that, I wouldn't take Josh Allen. I wouldn't.
Well, I think you also need to take into consideration the shoulder issue that he went through this season, too. I mean, that's something that I think has to really be looked into.
And an NFL veteran personnel guy was on the phone with me yesterday, and he said, you know why I'm laughing my butt off at all of these mock drafts? He said, because we haven't even gotten to the combine yet, and what's the number one purpose of the combine? It's to give each one of these guys the thorough physical and to get all their medicals. Because until we have that stuff,
it changes. Yeah.
You don't know anything about where that guy should be placed on the quote mock draft board. And so to give any of these mock drafts even a grain of salt before the combine, he said it's laughable. He said, I can tell you there are organizations in the NFL that don't even do mock drafts, period. Don't even bother with them at all.
Well, I mean,
then there are others who will do them after the combine. But nobody worth their grain of salt will do a mock draft before the combine because the medical supersedes everything. And by the way, Rosen, concussion, exploratory shoulder surgery.
All of those things have to be looked into. Yeah.
And guy said to me, I'd mark him down at least a half a grade unless he could go to the combine and prove to me that physically he's totally clean and it's not a problem. But right off the bat, I'm thinking he may be marked down half a grade. It's like a conditional half a grade.
Well, that's
because on the face of it, we know there are issues.
That's why the combine is beneficial, because you bring your medical teams with you, and they can actually see the person upside down, inside out, and up close and personal. That's important. I mean, the dialogue's going to change. I mean, think about how the dialogue changed with a Miles Jack and a Jalen Smith, two linebackers who were expected to be maybe number one, number two overall picks, and then things changed because of their health. Let's head back to the phone lines, check in with Lisa in Brooklyn. Lisa, what's happening?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Doing well, Lisa.
Great.
What do you got for us?
I love the hire. I like Pat Shurmur.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to be great for Eli. And I'm with you guys, and especially I know with Paul, I really want to trade this pick because I really feel we can get a Christmas load of picks. But that being said, I have a question for you guys. Is it any? I know a lot of things are rumors, but is there any truth to the new defensive coordinator hire?
Well, all of those things are rumors, Lisa. I mean, nothing is official at all. So anything you're seeing, I mean, we're seeing,
Lisa,
too, but it's clearly rumors.
Lisa, I'm just going to say one thing. Over the course of the last 3 days, according to the reports, the Giants will have two defensive coordinators.
Yeah.
Well, they may have five, to be honest with you.
I was reading that it was we got the Cardinals defensive coordinator, and he was going to sign, and because I know he runs a 3-4.
That is correct. He has a base 3-4 with a 4-3 philosophy. Because
right, so how much would that change our defense, like JPP
Chandler Jones,
the linebacker position?
Chandler Jones is a stand-up defensive end. They call it a 3-4 because there's three guys with their hands in the dirt with the Cardinals, and Chandler Jones was usually a stand-up defensive end. So they ran a lot of 4-3 principles and philosophies, but it's called a 3-4 because only three guys had their hands down on the ground. So it's kind of vague and gray when you talk about that kind of thing. But in reference to your actual question, look, if there's anything that I hope people have learned in the last couple of months, in fact, it goes all the way back to the spring when practically every single media guy in New York City, except myself, said that Odell Beckham was holding out and was then going to hold out. And what happened? To me, that's where the clickbait really took over, at least in New York City, because that was the first laughable storyline that was played out in all the papers. And there have been many since, including Eli Manning being traded to Jacksonville.
Yeah.
How many more do I have to give you?
I know.
You know,
it's crazy because this morning I'm like, oh, wow, they hired a defensive coordinator. Pat Shurmur hasn't even talked yet on Friday.
Well, again, and Matt Patricia was the head coach, too, right?
Right.
Bottom line, Lisa, I deal with facts. I deal with reality. I don't deal in rumors. I don't deal in clickbait. I'd be glad to talk to you about as much of the defensive coordinator as you like when he gets hired. To that point, I'm not going to believe everything I read on the web or in the newspapers. I'm just not going to do it.
Well, and listen, it's understandable that the rumors are circulating, given the fact that once a head coach is hired, Lisa, now the next question becomes, well, how is his staff going to look? So, I mean, I'm not necessarily surprised. Listen, that's the nature of the beast. I think you bring up, though, a valid question about if the Giants were considering experimenting.
Right, that's what had me so interested. I wanted to call you guys because if they do hire, it's a 3-4.
Correct.
We're talking about a whole different
thing. Well, and I think, Lisa, that is a valid question. And listen, appreciate the phone call. I want to get to some other calls along the way. And thanks so much for the phone call. What I was going to add, Paul, before you throw your two cents in, what people have to understand is the linebacking core right now for the Giants has a lot of free agents.
It's thin.
So my point is, when you take into consideration a 3-4 versus a 4-3, the personnel could very well change in terms of what the new defensive coordinator is going to have to work with. Also, it's important to note, Keenan Robinson, for example, who I know is due to be a free agent, he has had experience in a 3-4 and a 4-3, mm-hmm. if you go back to his time with the Washington Redskins. So a number of the players on the current defense who are under contract, or even if their deals are about to expire, have had exposure to both schemes. And that's not unheard of in the National Football League from one year to another where you see defenses switch like that.
You know, I would add that if the Giants were to go to somebody who wanted to go with a 3-4 look, Olivier Vernon played a lot of stand-up defensive end this past season. So it's not as big a stretch as you think it is if they wind up hiring somebody who uses that as his primary base.
And the way Spags utilized defensive linemen, he mixed and matched guys in terms of ends moving inside
even
and
Jason
tackles Pierre moving Paul outside.
Stood up a little bit
yeah,
too this year.
So, I mean, they even had a taste of that based on all of Spags' different schemes. Let's head back to the phone lines. We check in with Bob in Maryland. Bob, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing?
Hi.
Well, Bob, what do you got for us?
Hey, guys. First, great show. And I just want to say I've learned a lot listening to you guys. And, Paul, your knowledge and that other caller, that aggravated me because I'm a big Davis Webb fan. Not saying either way, you know, the way the Giants want to go with the second pick. You know, it's a guess. All of us have an opinion. But
sure.
What I wanted to say was this, that every now and then a great player comes along. And in college, you're rolling the dice because, like you said, translating to the NFL, you never know if the player is going to become an Odell Beckham. Like the Giants landed a very special player in Beckham. But Penn State's running back, Barkley, I had the opportunity to watch four or five times. And he, to me, is something really, really special about him. And the ground game with him and Gallman, I mean, coming with that type of a look, if he fans out to be the back they're projecting him to be, and a lot of the experts, so-called experts, have him as the number one overall talent in this draft, imagine him with the play action with Eli, with an improved offensive line. And a running back of that caliber. Some people are saying he's the best back to come along in the last 15 years because he can pass block, he can catch the ball as a wide receiver, and he's a phenomenal back. I saw Penn State play, like I said, four or five times, and his quickness and moves and explosion and strength, he's got everything that you want in a running back. And I was just wondering, like, that's the first part of my question, what you thought of Barkley. Do you think the Giants would ever take a second pick for a running back? Like, is that something a team would consider? Is, like, the first part of my question. What do you guys think of Barkley? Have you had a chance to see film on him or get a chance to watch him?
Yeah, I've watched a little bit on him. There's no question about his spectacular talent. The negatives would be right now is in terms of his ability to see the field properly and to pick the right holes. There is certainly some polish that's going to have to be put on him before he becomes the true superstar pro that most people think he will become. But you're right. He certainly does have all the tools to be a terrific NFL back. In theory, it's not a great idea to pick a running back number two overall in the draft.
Okay.
Because their longevity is always at question. Their durability is always going to be at question because of the position that they play. That's just a given. So you got to have kind of extenuating circumstances to make that pick. Clearly, the Cowboys felt that way when they used the high first rounder on Elliott.
Right.
The Jaguars felt that way with Fournette.
Well, I said this on...
There can be circumstances where you'd want to do it.
On yesterday's show, I brought this fact up. Of the top 10 rushing teams in the NFL this season, three of them had a starting running back that they took in the first round, Bob. Just to give a big picture perspective, the Panthers, it would go to four if you want to consider Christian McCaffrey as the starter, but they also had Jonathan Stewart. So you're talking about more than half the teams that were in the top 10 in the NFL in rushing last season had a running back that was taken outside of the first round, was signed as a free agent, was a late-round pick. So a variety of teams have found a different path to take in order to succeed on the ground. Now, with that being said, Bob, Christian McCaffrey was the eighth overall pick with Dave Gettleman as the general manager of the Carolina Panthers.
Yes,
so
he was.
Would it be unheard of if the Giants take a running back at number two to answer your question, Bob? No, I don't think it would be unheard of. But I think you also need to look at, to Paul's point, the durability of that position. And that's why a lot of teams need three or four running backs, because it's hard for a guy one season to last 16 games.
And of course, the greatest Giants running back ever, Tiki Barber, was a second-round pick. You know,
right.
He doesn't.
Yep.
You know, you don't have to make that pick there. But ultimately, the thing that's going to determine whether or not they take a running back there, and I think Barkley's the only guy you'd even think about among the running backs coming out who you would put in that high of a spot. You have to know that your offensive line is going to be better and good enough to give him a chance. Now, I remember the call yesterday said, well, sometimes your running back can make your offensive line look better with his moves and his shakes and everything. That is true. It can happen. He better have incredible vision. He better have an incredible amount of maturity to understand the patience that he's going to have, and that he's going to have to be able to work behind a line that maybe isn't as good as it needs to be. Because you and I have seen many running backs who, because their line wasn't very good, and Andre Williams comes to mind.
Line
wasn't very good. It threw him off psychologically. He wasn't prepared to play the kind of game where he was going to have to make guys miss and do all the things on his own. And what happened? He lost all his confidence, and Andre Williams is now kaput. I mean,
there's a lot of factors that play a role.
And
Bob, listen,
but it's key.
We're going to let you go. Appreciate the phone call. We've got another guest on the line as we switch gears to the Senior Bowl, and that means that we welcome in our very own John Schmelk, who's in Mobile, Alabama. John, how are we doing today?
Hey, John.
We're doing well. Me and Dan Salmon are in the car on the way to Peebles Stadium right now to watch the second day of practice. But I must admit, I had an incident yesterday that really made me strongly consider sending in my resignation letter to the Giants. So I'm at media day with all the people there, and somebody walks up to me and goes, "Hey, are you Lance Meadow?" I almost killed myself.
I don't know if there's some hyperbole in this story or there's actually some reality in this story. That remains to be seen.
Oh, but John.
You can confirm with Dan Salamone. This actually happened.
Well, I am looking forward.
It was one of the worst moments of my life.
Oh, my God.
But
wow.
John, here's the key. Were you down on the ground tying your shoelaces?
No, I was standing.
You
that's
were standing.
Then that's impossible.
I would love to know who could absolutely mistaken John Schmelk for me. I would love to know this individual.
I want to know that, too.
I want to know.
Great question.
Well, listen, I'm not expecting you to throw the individual under the bus, but can you tell me this? Was this a member of the media or was this an actual fan?
It was somebody that apparently, I think, he seemed like a young kid. I think he might have been like a college kid. I think he said he worked at a college radio station in like Southern Jersey or something like that.
Okay. Wow. Boy.
What are you going to do?
I don't know.
Hey, anyway, John, have you
how do we transition out of that to the Senior Bowl? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
We're so happy that John and Dan are down there for Giants.com.
Well, we're happy Dan's down there. Let's specify. But anyway,
man,
continue.
You are tough. So, John. What?
Oh, you're thrilled I'm not there. You guys get to talk. I'm not there. Of course you love it. Come on.
Oh, my goodness. So, John, first off, I know that Dave Gettleman's down there. Pat Shurmur has gotten down there. He won't be back up here to the Giants until Friday to the facility for the presser. Have you had any chance at all to at least interact with them?
We will have a chance to talk to Dave Gettleman between practices today. You should see a written story up on Giants.com. There are a few New York-based reporters down here, so Pat Hanlon's here. He will make him, Dave Gettleman, available to us later on today. But we will not have a chance. I believe they are saving Mr. Shurmur for the big press conference blowout on Friday.
Right.
Understandable. Well, you have had an opportunity to also look at the prospects. And for those of you who haven't had a chance, John Schmelk and Dan Salamon had detailed write-ups on Giants.com. You can check that out. Mm-hmm. Some real good stuff. John, let's start with the quarterbacks. Obviously, that's the biggest storyline. I know they had one practice. They also spoke to the media. I know you focused a lot on Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield. What did you see out of the two thus far, and what's jumped out to you?
Well, you know what? I think from what we saw from both guys is exactly what I saw from them looking at their college tape over the course of the last week and a half. Baker Mayfield, obviously, he measured in late, but he measured in at just under 6'1". I stood next to him after practice, and I said to myself, he's on cleats. I'm in, you know, sneakers, and he was barely taller than me. So I was not surprised that he came in under 6'1". It was not a surprise, but you'd like it better than that. His hands, though, measured in at 9.5 inches, which is a good size for a quarterback, so I think that kind of allays some people's concerns. Russell Wilson has similarly big hands. In terms of on the field, look, Mayfield was poised. He was good. He was quick with the football. He was accurate. And even though he's not a big guy, he has the arm strength to make all the throws. Then you have Josh Allen. Look, he is all the traits you want out of an NFL quarterback. He came in at just under 6'5", 235 pounds. He looks the part. He is the cannon for an arm. He threw the ball so hard a couple times yesterday. Receivers had trouble catching his passes. But then again, he was erratic sometimes. His footwork got sloppy. Yeah. He airmailed a couple of balls, and he wasn't as accurate, which is the same stuff you saw on tape from him when he was at Wyoming. So you really have a dichotomy in two very different types of players when GMs try to put their analysis on them for the NFL draft in April.
Hey, John, for those folks who are at work a lot and don't get a chance to watch some of the clips that NFL Network has been showing of the Senior Bowl practices, can you give them an idea of exactly when you say they're practicing, what are they doing? 7-on-7s? Are they doing 11-on-11s? Are they just doing quarterbacks with the receivers doing route trees? What exactly are you able to see?
Yeah, I talked to both head coaches about the types of practices they were going to run. And Bill O'Brien talked about trying to put the guys into maybe some situations where they haven't been in before in college to see how they react to things that they weren't asked to do in college but asked to do in the NFL. And then Vance Joseph said, look, I want to put these guys in a position where they can succeed and show off what they do well. And then he described the practice as a Denver Broncos-style training camp practice. And I think that's the best way I can describe for people that have seen a training camp practice. Basically, you'll start with walkthrough stuff to see if the guys can, you know, carry what they did in the meetings. This is a quick turnaround for these guys trying to learn an offense real quick. Then they do stretching. Then they come out. They'll do one-on-one. They'll do plays against air. So you have quarterbacks throwing to wide receivers against no defense. Mm-hmm. Then after that, they'll go to one-on-ones. You have the quarterbacks throwing to receivers and corners, the quarterbacks throwing to running backs, being covered by linebackers and tight ends being covered by safeties. And then off to one side at the same time, you'll have one-on-ones between O-line, D-line. Those O-line, D-line one-on-ones will continue through seven-on-sevens with the skill position guys, and then they'll do full team stuff. So a lot of people were asking me about players yesterday, and they're like, oh, why didn't you mention this guy? He was good in practice. And I try to explain to people that it's impossible to watch everybody.
Sure,
of course. Yeah. Different individual reps between different position groups going on at the same time. So you can only watch one set at any moment. I'm going to try to focus on O-line, D-line today. I looked at the quarterbacks a lot yesterday.
Well, it's similar, John, to like Giants training camp. I mean, when they break up into their positional drills, it's hard to focus on every single position simultaneously. You got to pick and choose who you want to focus in on. So, I mean, I think that's a very valid point. It was interesting. I was reading, John, and I think you maybe even referred to this in your write-ups, or it was Dan Salamon. There's still speculation that Baker Mayfield may not even play in the actual game. Is that correct? Is he still sort of up in the air?
You know, I guess Dan might have wrote about that.
Okay.
That Baker Mayfield might not play in the game over the weekend. I think his agent might have mentioned something about that. There has not been much, you know, scuttlebutt among the media and the people here about that. I mean, I can't imagine he wouldn't play. He's looked good in practice, despite the fact he really hasn't had a lot of time to work on the playbook. I think it'd be a big disappointment if he didn't play
Absolutely.
In the game. But honestly, each team has four quarterbacks, right? So each quarterback's only going to play a quarter of football.
Yeah.
And that's usually how they work it. So you're not going to miss a lot. You'll see a lot more from him in practice than you would in the games anyway.
John, by the end of the day yesterday when practice was over and the media was kind of collecting, was there one or two names that people just started to kind of chirp about, saying that, oh, you know, this guy kind of caught our eye, or maybe even a guy who a lot of people were kind of, that was kind of disappointing, even after only one day? You know, first impressions sometimes do mean a lot to people.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, you guys. I think there's some, like, cops trying to get the two New Yorkers hanging out in Alabama down here. We'll let
yeah,
them
those two are dangerous.
On the
yeah.
road. Thank you very much. we're going to have our own little My Cousin Vinny moment down here in a second.
Uh-oh. The two Utes from New Jersey are down there.
Yeah, two Utes. I mean, look, there are a couple guys that I think drew attention. Paul, one guy I know you're going to love when you look at him on tape is Will Hernandez from UTEP.
Yeah,
they were 0-12 last year. The team stunk. But this guy, to quote Dave Gettleman, is a hog molly. He's 6'3". He's 340 pounds. He played with his hand in the dirt in college. He is your mauling offensive guard that's going to push the line of scrimmage and create space in the run game. And some people have talked about him maybe inching up into the late first round. So that could be a guy maybe that the Giants could target with their second-round pick. Two guys that jumped out to me, I like both running backs here, Rashawn Penny from San Diego State and Akram Wadley from Iowa. Both guys are very, very versatile. They both do special teams. Wadley did kickoff return at Iowa. Penny did punt return at San Diego State. Both guys caught the ball well out of the backfield. They're shifty. They can run it. So those are two guys that kind of jumped out to me. And then I think one thing that jumps out, Paul, and I'll try to keep an eye on this today looking at the O-line, D-line, there's a lot of small school offensive linemen here, and I think that's part of the quest of Phil Savage as a Senior Bowl and NFL executives, you know, trying to find offensive linemen that can do what NFL teams want them to do and didn't play, you know, just in that spread system in a two-point stance. There's some Division II guys. There's guys from, you know, really small mid-major type conferences that ran more NFL-type stuff in college that maybe people think might translate better to the NFL. than some of the spread stuff some of the guys from the big programs might
I think that's the Ali Marpet syndrome, you know, when he wound up jumping up and it was like, wait a minute, this guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Well, and John, you referred to that because I know you said you were going to focus on offensive and defensive linemen today, but I believe in your write-up you had a glimpse of some battles between some Alabama and Georgia linemen, and one of your observations was the fact that it was nice to see two guys that are familiar with pro-style offenses as opposed to seeing one guy battle another guy and they're from opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, Paul, and I think that's another guy you're going to like, and Lance, you'll like him too. Deshaun Hand is the defensive tackle from Alabama who's obviously – a talented player and has a lot of respect from people here. And he was going up against Isaiah Wynn, who was Georgia's starting left tackle the whole year. But he's one of those guys that they don't believe he'll translate the tackle on the pros. So here at the Senior Bowl, he's been playing guard. And he did an excellent job at guard during the couple of one-on-one drills I did watch yesterday. And I think he's one of those guys that could move up as someone that played left tackle in college. We've seen this from guys before. You know, Zach Martin played left tackle in college. He's a great guard in the NFL. And I'm not telling you he's not a pick, but I think he could be a middle-round pick and translate to guard at the next level, a guy that can move, has some athleticism, can pull, do some zone blocking, that might be of interest to some teams that played in a for a program, you know, recently comes from the Nick Saban school that runs a lot of pro-style stuff.
John, my final question has to do with the linebackers. We know the Giants have been thin at linebacker. From your perspective, does it sound like there are any stellar linebackers in this crop?
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. Dan Salmo and I thought about doing a big story on some of the linebackers here, but there's nobody that really jumps out at you. There's a linebacker from USC, but he's more of a 3-4 pass-rushing outside linebacker that's here. So a lot of the guys that are coming out, the Tremaine Edmonds, he's not here. The Roquan Smith, he's not here. So from what I've seen, and I'll take a look at them today as well, they're on my list of guys I want to watch today. Nobody has really jumped out at me so far at that spot. Actually, I should say there was one hit yesterday, Trey Williams. I forget where he's from, but he put a hit on Rashad Penny during practice that you could hear in the press box. It was really, really impressive. And that was one thing that drew some eyes during team drills.
You know, before I give it back over to Lance, the hitting, John, let me just ask you about that. How hard is the hitting? We talk about how in the NFL the practices are like flag football. How hard's the hitting at the Senior Bowl?
I would consider it the equivalent of a stud practice at Giants training camp where they're hitting, they're cracking shoulder pads, but nobody's laying each other out.
Right.
All right. Well, John, we're going to let you work on your escape route from the local authorities, and hopefully you'll be mistaken for myself once again by other various members of the media.
Yeah, but then he may not get out of jail for the next 30 years.
Yes, well, those Utes are very dangerous, so
didn't call in a tip to get me thrown in jail. So you guys can lose BBK the rest of the offseason.
Well, I don't know. Paul's working on his connections down in Mobile, Alabama. You know, we don't necessarily know a lot of people down there. So we're trying to work that out. But with that being said, enjoy your time in Alabama. John Schmoke joining us from the Senior Bowl with some of his observations from what's going on down there in terms of the running backs, the quarterbacks he commented on, as well as some of the offensive linemen and defensive linemen, which he's going to focus on a little bit more today.
Yeah, you know, Hernandez is a guard, the guy from UTEP he was talking about. I saw him in I believe he was in, I don't know if it was the Shrine Game, I think it was last week, in one of the other All-Star games.
Yeah, remember East-West Shrine Game.
There were three. There's the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl, there's the East-West Shrine Game, and there's the Senior Bowl. When I was younger, there was also the Japan Bowl, there was the Hula Bowl, there was the Blue-Gray Game. There were so many of these All-Star games.
The early 1900s, you know, they had a lot of time to work on their skill set. But anyway, continue. Yes.
Yeah. Leather helmets, too.
There we go.
Did you know they have leather helmets?
With all the good stuff, yeah. I know.
In any event, all those games have gone by the wayside, probably because of sponsorships. And
I
also,
think that's a big part of
also,
it.
Also, a lot of it is a lot of these agents don't want their players playing in too many of these games because they're worried they're going to get hurt.
Well, you know what's interesting? I'm glad you brought that up. I know in college basketball, I'm assuming that there is no limitation, but in high school basketball, there's a limitation on how many All-Star games these players could take part of.
That's correct.
Now, I don't think that exists in terms of college athletes going to the pros, but sometimes I'm sure the philosophy is they don't want to wear these guys out. They don't want to expose them too much. Remember, that's a big part of it as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a valid point. why you only see certain players take part in certain All-Star games.
But in reference to John's comment, yeah, Hernandez, I think, could slip into the very end of the first round. He certainly, you know, it's reasonable to think he could be there when the Giants pick at the beginning of round number two. He's a guard. He's definitely not a tackle. He is a guard. But that's somebody you might want to at least keep an eye on as they look to bolster the line. Although I think they need more tackles than they do guards.
I think all of those are fair observations. I was just going to switch real quickly to the opposite defensive line here in terms of Davenport out of Texas San Antonio, the defensive end. Small program, but also considered to be one of the top prospects on that side of things. So that's a player to also watch, and he'll be at the Senior Bowl too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching the game for sure. Like I said, I watched both the PA and the Shrine game last weekend. The NFLPA game really didn't have anybody that enticed me very much. I did think that their crop of prospects was on a much different level than the Shrine game. Shrine game had a handful of guys. In fact, Jones, the defensive end out of Miami, was a guy who really stuck out to me as somebody who I would be intrigued by at some point, probably late second day, maybe fourth round, first round of the third day. Maybe even higher. Who knows? Let's see how his stock continues to rise during the course of the combine and stuff.
Let's head back to the phone lines. 201-939-4513. We've got Jones in New York. Jones, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Thanks for sneaking me in.
Yeah,
hi.
No problem. What do you got for us?
So my earlier question about the defensive coordinator actually was already kind of answered because I actually saw a report that was in the affirmative that we actually hired him, and I think that's the confusion. There's a couple people saying we've actually hired him. The wording is Giants hire.
The Giants haven't made any official announcements, so if anything, it's all reports.
Here's what I will tell you. Right before the show, I did check with the Giants front office here, and I asked for confirmation. Is it official? Is it not official? The Giants said we have nothing official to report. And that's the bottom line. So, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm hesitating to believe anything right now because we're in this studio and, whatever else is out there is out there.
Exactly. So I was going to – I just want to say thanks, by the way, for holding the show down. I know going down to the Senior Bowl as a reporter is probably really fun and something you guys look forward to doing. So thanks for staying home while Lance is down there having all the fun.
You mean John?
John, yes. Boy, that's the second time that somebody mistaken John and Lance today. We're batting 1,000 today. We're 2 for 2. Do we have a third one on the horizon? Trust me, we're never complaining when Schmuck leaves the studio. So you don't have to thank us for holding down the fort. Trust me. It's our absolute pleasure to be here when he's not. I can guarantee you that.
Anyway, we got another minute or two. What did you want to ask? We apologize for taking your time.
Absolutely not. It's fine. So my question was when Gettleman came in, he said that he wanted a head coach that's going to act as a CEO and kind of like oversee the team. And that's something McAdoo didn't do. And my concern was that the other day I heard a report that Shermer's going to actually – be calling the plays, and I know I heard yesterday's interview where that's kind of like necessary. If it's his offense, he's the one who knows it best. It's probably better for him to call the plays. But I just worry that him being involved in the play calling, if that rumor's true, is kind of like going against even what Gettleman said. He wanted somebody who's going to be a CO, and I just wondered what your guys' thoughts on that was.
I think it's real simple. Brad Childress seemed to indicate to us that it probably would not go that way. While he admitted that, Shermer knows the plays better than anybody else who would be on staff, he also did indicate that in the second year of Shermer's tenure with Cleveland, that's why Brad was brought in, to call the plays, because in his words, holding that play sheet in front of you tends to block your vision from a lot of other stuff that's going on. So I know that report is out there. Brad Childress seemed to indicate otherwise without putting words in his mouth that he thought it was better if Shermer didn't call the plays. I think Dave Gettleman, who's going to talk to the Senior Bowl media today, maybe John Schmelk can get something on that, and there can be clarification, or maybe we have to wait till Pat Shurmur gets here on Friday and holds his press conference. So I don't know that I want to say much more about it until we know what the facts are.
And here's the other thing to keep in mind, Jones. There's a variety of head coaches that call plays across the NFL. I mean, you can argue that there's been mixed results here and there.
Is it about a third?
I don't know the exact number. It may be a third. I mean, the two guys that obviously come to mind, and things have changed over the course of their careers, but Mike McCarthy with Green Bay, he's had it. He's given it up. He's returned back to being the play call. And then Andy Reid with the Chiefs. He's had it. He's given it up. He's taken it back. So, you know, those are two that come to mind because those are two coaches that have been with teams. I mean, McCarthy longer than Reid because Reid was with Philadelphia, but have been with their teams for a lengthy period of time. And, you know, to Jones's point, the caller on the line, where you're looking for a CEO, and I get that, but I think people – there are certain coaches out there that have been able to balance both responsibilities. So it really comes down to the individual and what the individual is comfortable doing. So just because it didn't work for one individual, I guess is my point, Jones, I don't necessarily think that it can't be done for another individual. But, you know, Brad Childress provided us his perspective, and he's been a head coach, and he's also been an offensive coordinator, and he indicated that there are challenges in terms of staying on top of the game and the ins and outs and the logistics of the game when you are bottled up with worrying about what you're going to call from an offensive standpoint.
Simply put, I'm of the opinion myself, I think it's preferred to split the duties, but I do think if the head coach is going to call them, he better have experience as a head coach and have been in the league for a while so that he's more comfortable to be able to take on the additional responsibilities. I had said from the beginning that when Ben McAdoo became the Giants head coach, it's his first head coaching job. Probably not a great idea to call the plays. You know, he obviously had to do what he had to do because it was his job. But I think it's more palatable to me if a guy who's already had experience as a head coach decides he wants to do it.
Well, and also, and appreciate the phone call, Jones, I think it's an example of Shurmur, to be specific, somebody that's had head coaching experience.
He's done
also,
it both ways now.
Correct. That's my point. That's the bigger point. He has been the play caller and the head coach, and he's also been the head coach, and then he's allowed somebody else to call the play. So you have an individual now coming into the Giants who has seen it from both ends. Did he learn which way he thought was more effective? That will remain to be seen. With McAdoo, to your point, Paul, you know, McAdoo had been a positional coach, and that was it. He hadn't even been an offensive coordinator,
correct,
Paul. So until he came to the Giants, remember, he had never called plays before. So it was really more uncharted territory, I think, than where Pat Shurmur is coming from. So, you know, that's something that I think you have to take into consideration. And you assume that Shurmur probably learned from his 2 years in Cleveland what he thought was the most effective way in balancing both roles or at least allowing help, and that will remain to be seen. And I think it also will say a lot depending on how he carves out his staff. Mm-hmm. You know, if he brings in a polished offensive coordinator, that may say a lot about how he feels that OC can come in and take on a big bulk of the offensive work. So that is something to certainly monitor moving forward. With that being said, that is going to wrap up today's program. We appreciate all the phone calls. We will try to address Twitter off the air as we normally do. We want to thank Sage Rosenfels for joining us earlier in the program, providing some insight through his coverage of the Vikings. Thank John Schmelk for his reporting from Mobile, Alabama. We'll be back up and running tomorrow with the latest edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live at noon Eastern. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.